While Sophie sat with the cryptex and talked about the vinegar, the dials, what the password might be, Langdon carried the rosewood box across the room to a well-lit table to get a better look at it. The key to the grail is hidden beneath the sign of the rose. Langdon held the wooden box up to the light and examined the inlaid symbol of the rose. Beneath the rose, sub rosa, secret. A bump in the hallway behind him made Langdon turn. He saw nothing but shadows. Teabing's manservant, most likely, had passed through. Opening the box, he examined the inside of the lid. It was smooth. As he shifted its position, though, the light caught what appeared to be an almost imperceptibly small hole on the underside of the lid, positioned in the exact center. Setting the box on the table, he looked around the room and spied a stack of papers with a paperclip on it. Borrowing the clip, he returned to the box, unbent the paperclip, then inserted one end into the hole. He gave a gentle push. It took almost no effort. He heard something clatter quietly onto the table. It was a small piece of wood, like a puzzle piece. The wooden rose had popped out of the lid and fallen onto the desk. Speechless, Langdon stared at the bare spot on the lid where the rose had been. There, engraved in the wood, written in immaculate hand, were four lines of text in a language he had never seen. A sudden movement behind him caught his attention. Out of nowhere, a crushing blow to the head knocked Langdon to his knees. As he fell, he thought for a moment he saw a pale ghost hovering over him, clutching a gun. Then everything went black. Sophie Neveu, despite working in law enforcement, had never found herself at gunpoint until tonight. Almost inconceivably, the gun into which she was now staring was clutched in the pale hand of an enormous albino with long white hair. Dressed in a wool robe with a rope tie, he resembled a medieval cleric.
"You know what I have come for," the monk said.
Sophie and Teabing were seated on the divan, arms raised. Langdon lay groaning on the floor as the monk circled around the divan until he faced Sophie and Teabing. His eyes fell immediately to the keystone on Teabing's lap. Teabing's tone was defiant.
"You will not be able to open it."
"My teacher is very wise," the monk replied. "Now, hand me the keystone."
"You know of the keystone?"
Teabing said, sounding surprised.
"Never mind what I know. Stand up slowly and give it to me."
"Standing is difficult for me."
"Precisely. I would prefer nobody make any fast moves."
Teabing slipped his right hand through one of his crutches and grasped the keystone in his left. Lurching to his feet, he stood erect, palming the heavy cylinder in his left hand and leaning unsteadily on his crutch with his right. The monk closed to within a few feet, keeping the gun aimed directly at Teabing's head. "It's quite heavy," the man on crutches said, his arm wavering now.
"If you don't take it soon, I'm afraid I shall drop it."
He swayed perilously. Silas stepped quickly forward to take the stone, and as he did, the man on crutches lost his balance. The crutch slid out from under him, and he began to topple sideways to his right.
"No!"
Silas lunged to save the stone, lowering his weapon in the process. As the man fell to his right, his left hand swung backwards and the cylinder tumbled from his palm onto the padded couch. At the same instant, the metal crutch that had been sliding out from under the man seemed to accelerate, cutting a wide arc through the air toward Silas's leg. Splinters of pain tore up Silas's body as the crutch made perfect contact with his psyllus, crushing the barbs into his already raw flesh. Buckling, Silas crumpled to his knees. The pistol discharged with a deafening roar, the bullet burying itself harmlessly in the floorboards as Silas fell. Before he could raise the gun and fire again, the woman's foot caught him square beneath the jaw. At the bottom of the driveway, Kale heard the gunshot.
"A weapon was discharged inside a private home."
Now he had no choice unless he wanted to land in front of a ministerial review board for negligent police procedure. Kale knew if he stood idly by for another second, his entire career would be history by morning. Eyeing the estate's iron gate, he made his decision.
"Tie on and pull it down."
In the distant recesses of his groggy mind, Robert Langdon had heard the gunshot. He'd also heard a scream of pain. Somewhere nearby, people were talking.
"Where the devil were you?"
Teabing was yelling. The manservant hurried in.
"What happened?"
"Oh my God, who is that? I'll call the police."
"Bloody hell, don't call the police. Make yourself useful and get us something with which to restrain this monster."
Langdon drifted out again. More voices. Movement. Now he was seated on the divan. His skull ached. As Langdon's vision finally began to clear, he found himself staring at a body on the floor.
Am I hallucinating?
The massive body of an albino monk lay bound and gagged with duct tape. Langdon turned to Sophie.
Who is that? What happened?
Teabing hobbled over.
You were rescued by a knight brandishing an Excalibur made by Acme Orthopedic.
From his seat on the divan, Langdon gazed down at the monk and tried to imagine what happened.
He was wearing a cilice, Teabing explained.
A what?
Teabing pointed to a bloody strip of barbed leather that lay on the floor.
A discipline belt. I could see the blood on his cloak. I took careful aim.
Sophie had gotten up and was standing by the wooden box.
Robert, what's this?
She was holding the small rose inlay he had removed from the lid. It covered an engraving on the box. I think the text might tell us how to open the keystone. Before Sophie and Teabing could respond, a sea of blue police lights and sirens erupted at the bottom of the hill and began snaking up the half-mile driveway. Teabing frowned.
My friends, it seems we have a decision to make, and we'd better make it fast.
Kalle and his agents burst through the front door of Sir Lee Teabing's estate with their guns drawn. Fanning out, they began searching all the rooms. They found a bullet hole in the living room floor, signs of a struggle, a strange, barbed leather belt, and a partially used roll of duct tape. Just as Kalle was about to divide his men to search the rest of the house, he heard the distant rumbling of an engine. Kalle was outside in seconds, grabbing one of his agents on the way. The men raced to a weathered gray barn whose doors were wide open. Kalle drew his weapon, rushed in, and flicked on the lights. The right side of the barn was a rudimentary workshop. On the other side of the barn, Kalle found a long line of horse stalls. No horses. Apparently, the owner preferred a different kind of horsepower. The stalls had been converted into an impressive automotive parking facility, and the collection was astonishing. A black Ferrari, a pristine Rolls-Royce, an antique Aston Martin sports coupe, a vintage Porsche 356. The last stall was empty. An agent pointed to a nearby pegboard on which hung several sets of keys. The labels above the keys bore familiar names. Daimler, Rolls-Royce, Aston Martin, Porsche. The last peg was empty. When Kalle read the label above the empty peg, he knew he was in trouble.